Welcome to my podcast, Follow Your Bliss, with me, Nicola Fisher. I'll be talking to people who inspire me and asking them about the journeys they've taken navigating change and how this has led them to find fulfillment and purpose. If you're on a quest to create a meaningful life for yourself, I hope these conversations inspire you too. Today's guest on the podcast is Nikki Pattinson. Nikki has been on my wish list of podcast guests for many years. I first came across her on a television program, which was about, I think, female entrepreneurs. I knew at that point that I really wanted to meet Nikki, and when the opportunity arose, I grabbed it. I've been lucky enough to hear Nikki speak on several occasions, and she never fails to both move me and inspire me. She talks about the pivotal moments in her life and how she is grateful for them and what they taught her and how we all have these moments that show us who we are meant to be in this lifetime. Just to let you know, there is a bit of swearing. I hope you enjoy this podcast with Nikki. My first question is going to be, what drives you?
And that's quite a complicated answer. I'll try to make simple. It's the picture. It's driven by two things equally. The picture of what I saw of myself as a child when I was growing up. And at 3 years old, I turned to my mum and I said, "What am I doing here?" And she goes, "What do you mean?" I goes, "Well, what am I doing here?" And she said, "What, here in this house on whatever afternoon?" And I said, "No, on the planet. Why, what have I come back to do? I've come to do something." And I knew that I would be an actress without an act, because nothing I do is an act. It's all very real. I wished I could freaking act. I wouldn't have got into as much trouble. But I knew I would be an actress without an act or a singer without a song, and that I would be on stage doing something, but I couldn't explain it, but I could feel it. And, you know, I am that person. I'm just not, I don't have the profile or the reach that person that I saw had. The other thing that drives me is that if I die not being that person, how much I would have let my sons are down, how much I would have let my sons down, and also everybody around me that's, you know, put food parcels on step for me when I haven't had any food, and, you know, and myself, you know, that keeps me awake at night. I'm 62 now, and I do believe it's my time. We've just been saying, you know, there's always a time in life and not until, and for me, I knew it a bit when I were older, but maybe not this much older. So there's your answer.
So just to talk about the bit about not letting your sons down, What does that mean to you?
Everything. The fact that my sons, so I don't know if anybody knows, but I've got one boy in heaven, Jackson, and one boy here. And one day I'll have to meet Jackson again. Whichever way you cook it, one day I'm going to turn up there and none of us ever know what day it is. And he'll either say, "Mum, you had such a gift, but you never did a bloody thing with it." Or, "Oh my God, I watched you. You were, honestly, when you got into your 60s, look at what you did." I mean, I'm not saying I've been quite successful, but there's levels of success and there's reach of success and there's what that means. And the other one is that I just want to make my Danny, you know, I've got this little thing. In fact, I know that this isn't being videoed, but I've got loads of pictures of me and him in this house. And every time I pass one of them, I have a picture of me, you know, of him in this house, perhaps on the day that I die, with whoever's with him. You know, he might have a wife then or his friends or whoever. And Danny is saying, "Me mum, when she got into her 60s, she freaking did it." And that is all I want. If I can do that, I'll have lived a good and fulfilled life, and I'll have been someone.
One of your strap lines is be someone, not everyone. How important is that to you to be someone?
Well, everyone is someone, but most people try to be everyone for lots of reasons, don't they? So, you know that a lot of the stuff that I do is around expression, but expressing who you actually are. And in society, in professional society, it's kind of been, we've over-professionalized ourselves out of business because everybody's trying to be the same, hiding behind a box of not one, not being very confident, but two, being who everybody else tells you to be. So, you know, you might, let's look at email, for instance. So you'll open your inbox on a morning, you'll have a freaking 200 emails all starting, "Hi, I hope you are well," and ending, "Kind regards." And whatever shit is in between those two phrases, nobody's going to be look at, because everybody is the same. Why would you read it? Because you're not connecting to that person. So we all try to be everyone. But the person who resonates is the someone, and a someone comes in many, many guises. You don't need to be Beyonce to be a someone. Everybody is a someone. It's just how you tell the world who you are.
It makes me smile when you talk about emails, because do you know what? You're one of the hardest people for me to email, because when I write to you, I'm always thinking about what you say, you know, and I want to start, "Hi, Nikki, how are you doing?" And I think, no, I can't say that.
Well, you probably could say that, but do you know what, Nicola? If I got an email from you, I won't give the stuff what it said. I'd open it straight away. Be aware of that point.
Oh, thank you. I know what you mean when you talk about people are all the same. And, you know, the businesses that I've worked with in the past, you come across clones. And I'm always more interested in the mavericks. And, you know, I mean, you're a maverick. I see you very much in that light. And it's how do people tap into this part of them that is different, the bit that I call my essence, or, you know, you might call it genius, you know, that sort of spirit of a person. How do you help people tap into that so that they can stand out and be different?
Well, first of all, I don't think people are all the same. I think they just act the same. I've never met anybody that I'm not interested in. And, you know, at the time we are recording this, we're 3 weeks into lockdown in the coronavirus pandemic. And I think that will have done people as much good as harm. I mean, obviously, you know, not the families who horrifically lose people that they love, but those of us who have just stopped. We've stopped being stimulated by things on the outside. Money's just lost its value. Who cares what car you drive? We've all got wardrobes full of clothes that we don't wear. We just go around in our pyjamas and tracksuits all the time. So we've been caused to look inwards. And that's been quite uncomfortable for some. I've had a lot of emails, mostly saying the same thing about how uncomfortable that is to look at yourself. But if you really look at yourself, you'll see where the freaking genius comes from, and you'll see why you're good at what you do. And every pivotal moment, every twist and turn, if you actually look at what those losses and the, you know, euphoria and huge, you know, huge depression, you know, and anywhere in between, if you put yourself in that space and show and see, actually work out what it taught you, you'll see why you're good at what you do. The trick is to express that, because that is what people relate to and buy. Why buy, inverted commas, everything you sell comes through who you are. And that's just, you know, really all I need to say is look at X Factor and Britain's Got Talent. We're more interested in the backstory of what made it so those people deserve to win, what made them fight as hard as they freaking did. You know, that's what we're interested in, and that's what they're selling us. It's not just the voice or the fact that they can freaking pull rabbits out of top hats. That always comes second.
What makes you so good at what you do?
Well, thank you, first of all, for saying that I am. And I'm not going to argue with you, because we've had, you know, we've had one or two wins. So what makes me so good at what I am? Utter decimation. Proving a point, and intuition, those three things. Heavy on the utter decimation. And there's a fourth thing there. So you might remember when I first started speaking, people quite like to laugh at me. You know, it were like, oh, God, have you heard how she talks? Oh, God, what she says? Oh, it's bollocks. Look at her. She's so unprofessional. Well, I love that because there's not too many people laughing now, Nicola. That's all I can say. But those people telling me that, you know, what's bloody old ex-market trader doing speaking to 3,000 people in front of black? What's she doing there? You know, have you heard her? She swears a bit. She's the, well, you know what? I quite, looking back, I were quite fueled by that because I couldn't believe their small-mindedness and their stupidity. So, but all my life, you know, I've had people say that I should have been different. I shouldn't speak with this voice. I shouldn't have this demeanor. And, you know, that's what people pay extra for now, freaking accent. They don't get this at the same price. So, I, you know, everything, even the things that decimate you as you're growing up, all those pivotal moments in life, they're the things that create the genius. If only you know how to express that and make it clear to other people who you are and why you know what you know.
I agree with you. I mean, one of my things that I talk about a lot, I think applies right now too, is that sometimes these pivotal moments and these moments of great loss and change are opportunities.
Mm. Yeah. Once you get your head around them, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Can you tell us about some of your pivotal moments and how that's changed you?
Yes. Right. First one, 16 years old. I can't count. I'm numerologically dyslexic and I can't organise things. So, you know, I did a little Zoom call on Friday, and with it being Easter, you know, I needed to get it edited and sent out to people that were on lists for it. I couldn't freaking do it. I spent 4.5 hours trying to work it out. So I've always been thought of as being a bit thick in quite an academic family. So at 16, when I started life in a shoe shop as a shop assistant at Peter Lord's in Huddersfield, I was a bit of a disappointment to my mum. And on the second day, you know, you get those moments in life that you never forget and you carry them in your heart forever. And on the second day, a family came in called the Potters, and they had a little lad called Andrew. I think Andrew were about 8 or 9. And I served him, you know, and Andrew was Down syndrome. And when they got to the till, Mrs. Potter said, "Where's your boss, love?" I goes, "Well, she's over there." And she called Mrs. Waddock, my first boss. So she said, "Can you just come over here, please?" And she put her arm around me, this lady. And that was totally alien to me because I came from a family where you were fed and that was it. The love word, the affection word, it was very, very different, you know, quite a dysfunctional family, but that's how it was in the 50s. You know, it was a very different place, early 60s. And she just said, "This girl, never get rid of her." And Mrs. Waddock said, "Why?" She said, "She's amazing. She's just the most wonderful young woman." And we all looked at this lady and she said, "My son has never let anybody put his shoes on in his whole life apart from me, his mother, and this girl, Nicola, as I were known then. People used to call me Nicola." And I'm not being funny and I'm not ashamed to tell you, but I stood there and I sobbed like a baby. Because nobody had ever given me in my life any validation. And that has been another driver for me all my life. It's the validation. And if you can validate people, you can elevate them. And if you can elevate them, you can take them anywhere you want for their own good. So, yeah, I never forgot it. And just to go on from that, anybody that's seen me speak or do anything, it's that same emotion, that validation that I do it for. You could pay me millions to do anything. I wouldn't give a stuff. But let me see that it has elevated somebody and that gives me a validation and I'd do it all freaking day long for anybody that asked.
Yeah, I think it's right. I mean, and, you know, you talking about that, it makes me feel quite emotional just thinking of you at that age and that experience that you had. And I remember, I think it was probably about 6 years ago, I think it was I think it was in Leeds, you were speaking, and there were about 12 speakers on the day. And, you know, we're all sat in the audience and people got tears streaming down their faces because, you know, your story has moved people. But also, it's not just about moving people, but it's about helping them connect to an experience that they've had as well. I think, you know, you can sort of think, oh, yeah, well, I remember a time when that was true for me as well. And it's, there's all that wrapped up in it. But yeah, I think consistently when I've heard you speak, you've had that impact on me.
I hope people have laughed as well.
Oh yeah, lot.
Do you know what? I know just exactly which gig you were talking about. It were at Royal Armouries, and the bloke that organised that, Danny, is still my friend today. And I was the only speaker that wasn't famous. And you know what? Wherever I speak, I'm the only person nobody's heard of. The only person nobody's heard of. And I've spoken with some massive names. But I've always held my own because in an act, and I've told the truth, you know. And the world is driven by emotion. And you have to feel emotion. One of the big problems in life today is nobody bloody knows who they are. You've got to know yourself before you can express yourself to the world. So when I've gone into these companies and worked with people or worked one-to-one, the first thing I've done, and this, look, there ain't a pair of Jesus sandals in sight in this house. You know, I'm not one of those ethereal, airy-fairy people. I'm as commercial as anybody you'll meet in your freaking life, and I've met millions for people. But the first thing I do when I'm sat in front of people is to drop into my heart and to try and see who they are at the very core of them. And then I try to describe that to them, and then we articulate it. And if you can do that, you're out there in the world. One of the problems is when people don't know who they are, and God, I wish, yeah, oh, you are recording this. Let me do this, because this is all for, I could do all this on my Zoom on Friday. It's very, very pertinent. It's obviously been it back in my head. But when people don't know who they are and they behave in a way that they are told to be by inverted commas professional society, hi, I hope you are well. Hello, would you like to take a seat? Bear with me. All that crap. They get deleted because we know we're so attuned to each other now energetically that we know you're just talking bollocks, and we can't have one more thing in our world that isn't chuffing real, because for the last 20 years, very little has been real, from the way that we act, what we say, to the way that we present ourselves. So we get deleted. So the first thing we have to do is to look to see who we are. And when I'm working with people, that is the first thing that I do. Drop into my heart and have a really, really good look at the soul that is stood in front of me. And again, I went on a bit there. You see, I freaking get on it, don't I? I can't shut the fuck up. But let me make it clear. I've made millions for companies, millions, by teaching their people, one, how to relate to themselves, then how to relate to the world.
A lot of people who will be listening to this are probably self-employed, sole traders, small businesses, creatives. And how do they sort of get in touch with who they are? You know, if they're sat at home listening to this, what sort of things would you tell them to do so that they get a better sense of who they are and what they can put out in the world?
Well, you would probably start by, if it was a small business, and this is quite pertinent because Thursday morning I did a one-to-one with a business that this me email package, blah, blah, blah. I'm not trying to sell it yet. But me, how to don't get deleted, how to keep out of the trash icon. At the end of it, you have to do a one-to-one Skype with me so that I know that you've got it and that what you're writing is an energetic match. So I worked with a brilliant bloke. He's fascinating, and he's got a fire safety, fire and security solutions company in Dewsbury. So he's telling me all this stuff and what he does, and I just goes, right, tell us how you started this business, why you started this business. And it turned out that he were really close to his grandmother, and she left him an amount of money. And at that time, he was, you know, he wasn't very happy at work, but he was working for somebody else in the same business. But when he started to speak about the values that this woman had and what she taught him and the impact she'd had on his life, when she gave him that money, he started the business. But the logo is in the colour of her favourite dress, which he still has. And when he started to talk about that, he spoke from a completely different dimension. And it was fast. I was gripped by this man and how he looks after people and how he trains the people that work for him. So they do those alarms that you put around older people's neck in care homes so that they click a thing. And you know, the way that he was speaking, he was saying, I tell my staff in the morning, I tell my boys in the morning before they go fit those alarms, that could be your grandma, that could be your mum in that bed. If you don't do this life, this right, you might be taking somebody's life. How are you going to feel about that? We've got to look after these people. You know what? It just showed why he'd taken this business from really quite small to something quite, I mean, he's setting staff on all the time. He's absolutely incredible. But it's about being relational and not being operational, because that sounds like quite an operational business. It is operational. You've got to have that kind of mind. But he made it relational with the stories that he told me. And that's where we started. And he got quite emotional because, you know, there were things in that business that he didn't realise that were there because of his childhood.
I think you call it the soul to soul connection, don't you?
Yeah.
And you know, you talk about clients being friends and or treating clients as friends, and that's a much nicer way to work with people. And it's building a rapport, and it's that resonance. And I think you've got a good place to start from then when you're working with somebody.
Yeah, clients isn't really a word that I would use, because I talk about trans language. It's when you've heard a word so many times that you know, delete the word and the person saying it. But yeah, you know, what I've never differentiated, you see. People are just people. I couldn't give a stuff if it's chairman of whatever, you know, or I'm sat at canteen. I couldn't give a stuff because I don't have that kind of hierarchy in my in my psyche. So yeah, everybody's got a soul, and that's what you connect with. And people that you work with are just friends that you work with. And the other thing is, of course, that it's a bit more than that, because when you run a business, like, you know this, Nicola, you know, one minute there's nothing, there's an idea in your head, and you create a logo around it and a demeanor and the words and, you know, the whole emotion, the whole feeling, the dimension around that business, words, body language, blah, 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 email style. And then you put that out into the world like a baby, and magic happens. And one minute there's nothing, and the next minute there's freaking everything. And that everything becomes your whole life. It becomes how you identify yourself to yourself and to the world. It also pays the mortgage. You don't get anything more impactful or real or important than that. So I never think of anybody as just somebody that I work with, because when you work on a level that actually melts everything out of the way and freaking creates something, you have to have that bond. You have to have that situation going on, because otherwise, it's never going to freaking work. You're just some other pillock with a freaking ebook, aren't you?
Yeah.
So, yeah, in fact, if you look on my Facebook page, you'll see, I would say, 2/3 of the 5,000 people on there are friends of mine that I've worked with and stayed friends with. And some are bloody chairman, and some people work part-time on a Thursday morning for 2 hours in WH Smith's. It, you know, it makes no difference to me. I am honoured and freaking proud of myself that they still want to be my mate. And I still see them, most of them, when I get a chance.
That's lovely. I've watched over the weekend, I was watching some of the videos. There was Halfords, I think there was Tesco, yeah. And the baker, was he called Dave?
Pete, the bun baking genius of Peter and other stories is what we call that Tesco product. That Tesco project, he's a bloody diamond. And there's Karen as well, Karen Atkins. We work with both of them at Tesco.
I think he's 50 this year.
It's two or 3 years old, that. Yeah, he'd gone 50. Yeah, that were funny. Yeah. He has now, but it was just before his 50th birthday. Yeah.
Yeah.
What a bloody amazing man he is. Amazing.
I just like the way everybody talks to you on the videos, and you know, everybody's saying what an amazing difference you've made to them and how it's enabled them to do things that they wouldn't have done unless you'd gone there. And I think, you know, I like the way you work side by side with people. You know, you're on the reception in the hotel and in Halfords, you got all the Halfords gear on. And it's not, people don't do that. People don't tend to work like that. You know, if they go somewhere, say as a consultant or something, you know, they just go in their normal clothes and go and do their job, but they don't get into the nitty-gritty of it like you do.
But that's because they talk about it, but they may not be able to do it. And there's a couple of things you've said there. Number one, it's such a freaking honour for me to work with those people. I am happy when I'm on them shop floors, you know. And I mean, at Halfords, I spoke to their management team and they gave me 6 gigs, one every Wednesday for 6 weeks. And then at the end of the last one, somebody said, well, if you're so bloody clever, get into one of our stores and do it. I go, brilliant. I'll go to York on next Wednesday. And I've got as long as I can have a film crew. And they gave me 2 products, promotional products. Because you have to, you know, it has to have, like, we've got to measure it. So, like, give it 2 products. And in an hour and a half, we sold more of those products than they'd sold in 10 full days. And we did it all in an hour and a half. If you watch that film back, you can see exactly how I'm doing it. But I love doing that. Why wouldn't I want to be on shop floor with my mates? That's freaking nirvana to me. Yeah. You know, we never stop laughing. And, yeah, I don't do those projects. I never touch the money. But I need to be on the shop floor as well to see what's happening. And I can't count, but I'll tell you what, I know what's on them bloody till rolls at end of day. I know what's on them bloody till rolls. And unless you can prove it, you shouldn't be bloody doing it, should you? So, no, I love it. I love it. They're my mates. Why would they trust me? I'm just another pillar turning up in a pair of shiny shoes and freaking eyelash extensions telling them shit. If I don't get down there, work with them and show them, and if I show people I'm in treble overnight, they can't deny it because they've just seen me do it. And I'm not, you know, I'm not a freaking superstar. I'm not extraterrestrial. It's only words and form. I mean, I know I'm over at freaking desk at everybody now, aren't I? But it's the words and the body language and the stories and the way you use expression that works. And it don't matter if you're, you know, like I am, or if you're much more gentle and you speak like this. It's the words that matter and the mindset that counts, not the demeanor, not the personality.
The podcast that I recorded last week, which is going live today, was with a lady who talks about storytelling. A narrative. I know you've mentioned storytelling. Why is it so important for us to be able to tell our story and to be good storytellers?
Well, a story can be just 2 sentences. It can be 2 lines, you know, in those 2 lines, you can completely change the way that people feel about you. I'll try and give you an example in a second. But we used to sit in and we're wired to listen to stories. We've listened to stories for all eternity. Cavemen would have told stories. What is the first, you know, what is most people's, like, most intense childhood memory? It's having your parents read to you. you know, so we're so used to stories, but it's how you tell that story relating to yourself. So I worked, this is a few years ago now, but I worked with quite a successful Leeds businessman. And after we'd done all this work, he just says, do you know what? He says, I've got a bit of a problem, me, Nick. He says, everybody thinks, you know, they've all got like an attitude about me. He says, I've been married 3 times and I've got 6 kids. So I said, all right, okay, well, let's have a look at that. So he says, I've been married 3 times and I've got 6 kids. So what is the backdrop to that? What do you think of that? And most people would think they just have they'd imagine him leaving one marriage, going to another, setting up more kids, leaving that. And there's, you know, like houses full of screaming women and kids left behind him. And then, so I said, right, what you need to do, you just do this. You say, yeah, I've been married 3 times and I've got 6 kids. Half pause, drop voice, slow down. Now you know why my life and business is so well organized. Pause. Von Trapp family's just come in. I've got 6 kids. I've been married 3 times and I've got 6 kids, me. Yeah, now you know why my life and my business is so well organized. Completely different, totally different emotions. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that's one of the things. I call that the one line that tells everybody who you are, one line that tells the world who you are. And most people have got that. It's just a matter of finding them. But that's only a story. It's a two-line story. That's it.
Do you have a thread that runs through your story? Do you have, in your life story, do you have themes that keep repeating themselves or a thread that runs through?
Yeah, utter fucking decimation and getting back up there, if I'm being honest. Utter decimation, literally getting so that I can hardly get out of bed for crying and then back on top of the freaking world again using what it was that I learned at that time. Yeah, absolutely. And it may not always be that way, but if it is, I would rather have that than have nothing. You know, I would rather have that than have got, you know, maybe happily married, had a couple of kids, gone to the shop on a Thursday, worked part, you know, nothing, there's anything wrong with that at all. But the life that I've had enormous lows. But massive eyes. And I've got this little picture, and I might be wrong, but I've got a little thought that, you know, if you go this way down to decimation, you're going to bounce right back up to the other side. And I've had dinners in restaurants and hotels with people that I never thought I would, that I would never dream I could ever have met. I've stayed in hotels on the planet, met people, done things, had experiences that makes me the luckiest girl in the world. And, you know, I think I bloody deserve it. I'm not saying that, and that's not arrogant. I do think I deserve it. But I'm also mindful that if I hadn't been kicked in the tits a couple of times, I wouldn't have been able to get to that place, because I wouldn't have had, what's the word I'm looking for? I wouldn't have been able to propel myself in the way that those decimate times have propelled me.
Can you tell us about one of your lows and how you pick yourself up again after it?
Yeah, absolutely. So I guess the one that a lot of people could relate to, we've had a few broken hearts. But I was the girl that everybody wanted to be, Nicola. When I was 28, I married the man who would soon become my ex-husband. And he had a market stall business. I went to work in it. We took it from $1,000 a week to $2 million a year, nearly 30 odd years ago now. And that was, you know, that is where I started learning the communication on the markets. That's where I started. But I had my first child, our Jackson. And Jackson, my mother was half Italian. And Jackson was a very beautiful little boy. And he had the blackest hair, the darkest skin, and the blackest eyes. And I couldn't understand that every time I looked into those eyes, I knew he was trying to tell me something that I didn't want to hear. And that was from the second he were born. When they put him in my arms, you know, I said, what is it, a girl or a boy? And they said, it's a very healthy, beautiful little boy. And I said, what happens when kids die? And nurse said, what? I said, what happens when babies die? What do you say to people? She goes, that's a strange thing. And I just knew. And she actually wrote to me after, actually. Anyway, so when he was 4 months and 2 days, and he'd be 30 now, our Jackson, and yesterday, you know, so it's 30 years ago, and yesterday, because great trauma, it doesn't disappear the older you get more recollection, I find, of the things that have really, really hurt you. You know, you can get more recollection. Anyway, it was a Thursday morning, the 2nd of November, 1989, and I just knew I'd had a premonition the night before. But because I was in a marriage where, let's just say that I had to have a bit of a work ethic, and I was, you know, I had to go to work, drop Dan, Jackson. Dan is my beautiful second boy. He's at Birmingham City. He's just a gorgeous boy. Anyway, so I just knew the night before something was desperately wrong, but I still dropped my son off at nursery. And I knew when I walked out of there, I glanced backwards and it was only 4 months and 2 days. And I won't bore you, but we'd had quite a lot of energetic communication that morning. He was telling me, and I looked into his eyes and I heard a voice go, don't leave him, go back and get him. And I ignored it, carried on walking, went to work. And at 13 minutes to one, I got a phone call to say that they'd put him upstairs, and it was a hot day, and they'd left him in his little suit, and they'd put him into a travel cot, and they'd left him to scream, which I found out later was how they, inverted commas, disciplined the babies. They put them upstairs so that they screamed and screamed so that they didn't cry for attention. Anyway, when they went upstairs, it overheated and died. And the shock of that, I took that phone call on Market Stall in Huddersfield, and I knew as I was walking towards that phone, I knew what it was. It was bizarre. And for that second, everything, I could hear somebody screaming, Nicola, when they told me. And then I realised it was me. And, you know, what unfolded from that was just horrific. You know, the scenes from that time that, you know, when I do recall them, my soul says, don't take me here again, please. So that, I had to bring myself back from that. I had to do, because, you know, my husband nearly killed him. My parents, it did kill them. My father was just struck dumb for days. My mother went shortly after with a bad heart, and I had to do. So that's where I learned how to get myself back up every morning. And the stuff that I talked about in the Zoom on Friday, I learned how to get it out of my system and how to live in the present moment, but to create something bigger as a result of it. And I did. We created a £2 million business out of that. And we saved people at both sides of that counter. And I don't think I would have done it in that way if I hadn't known what heartbreak was. So what is it, you know, and just, I know I'm going on a little bit, and I'm sorry, but let me tell you what that gives me that I am so grateful for. I can walk into any auditorium. I can walk onto any shop floor. I can walk into any lawyer's office, and I know immediately who needs me. I know immediately who has been in the same place. It's like a zoning on them. And I know how to help them. And that is, I hope I'm not sounding like an arrogant person, but that is a God-given gift. And I were given it for a reason. And it is a lot of the reason I do what I do for a living. I wrap it up as sales and expression, but it never has been anything to do with sales. It's just that I know that the Tesco's, the Alfred's, the Big Lot, I know they wouldn't have bought me if I'd have wrapped it up any other way. So I went on a bit there, but yeah, God bless my little Jackson. He never left me. He never left me, that boy, and people have seen him on stage with me.
Would it be fair to say that when something like that happens to you, although I know it was devastating, there's something good comes from it?
Yeah, without a doubt. And I'd also go as far as saying that I think it's predestined, because I knew. I think that we move in soul groups. So we will have known each other before, I'm sure, because we had instant resonance. It was like, oh, You again. Hiya, great to see you. And it don't matter if we wouldn't see each other for 15 years. When we sat down, as soon as I saw you on here today, well, like no time had elapsed. So my ex-husband, my son, my second son, you know, I had a miscarriage after Danny, my second boy, who is 29 now. You know, we may just imagine for a second, because we all know how powerful the soul is. Just imagine for a second that we all got together as a family group, a soul group, before we came here. And my husband said, I'm going to nearly kill you. My mum said, I'm going to nearly kill you. My dad said, I'm going to be a beef farmer. You'll see things and hear things that people should never feel, but it'll make you vegan. And my second son said, Mum, we'll have a life together. You wait and see. And my Jackson said, Mum, I'm only coming for a short time. But in that short time, you know, we'll know each other because we'll know each other for, I'm his mother for all eternity. Mm-hmm. And when I go, it will teach you things that you need to be who you are meant to be in this lifetime. And maybe it is wishful thinking for me, but that for me is the truth, Nicola. It explains an awful lot of things to me. And there's been loads of stuff happen, you know, that I won't bore you all with now. I'm not just saying that with no to back it up with. There's things go on in my life that kind of point towards all that being true.
It's the truth for me as well. I mean, I've not gone through things like you've gone through, but, you know, there's been moments that have changed me when, you know, you go through your own form of heartbreak and it puts you on a different path. And, you know, I'm convinced that a lot of what I'm doing now, and even meeting Chris, I wouldn't have met Chris if certain other things hadn't happened in my life, you know, certain milestones that have brought me to this point now. And, you know, it's, there's something bigger that goes on that is mapping stuff out, making sure that we meet the right people. It's, you know, giving us hard times as well. But yeah, I've been convinced for a long time that these hard times are catalysts. And I think as well, you know, where we are now with the coronavirus, it's very much, it's a catalyst for a new beginning. Mm-hmm. So after Jackson died and you had to go through all that heartbreak, how did you get yourself back? How did you start to recover, and what did you do to get your life back?
On market stall. So we had a 2 million a year market stall business, 1.8 million a year, selling cakes and biscuits. And if we look at the time in history, it were Maggie Thatcher's years. And love or hate her, she told society that if you were a low-income family or a single parent, you actually didn't have a value. You had no validation. That's come up again. And so I used to work even when I'd have Danny were on my back and I were on one of our market stalls. And I learned very quickly how to elevate people, not by filling them full of shit, but by a kind word, you know. And I used to work out what emotions, so I'd pick people out of what. So this is like, we're on a market stall now. I've got 50 deep people. There's three or four of us behind counters. And these were up and down country. And I used to work out, right, so I'm going to serve you, single parent, because I can see where you are right now. How can I make you feel better? So I worked it all out with tone of voice and how we did and what we did, blah, blah, blah. And those people, you know, if you're working with one person, it's like London Palladium in retail. The whole audience, as I used to call it, could see. So everybody was elevated. And I used to use what I knew to fix people and to taught all my staff, you know, how to fix people. But of course, really, when we were fixing those people, really, I was fixing myself. You know, it looked like I was trying to fix everybody else, but really, it was me. I was in a rubbish marriage, you know, and I didn't have a lot of self-esteem. And, you know, I felt pretty crap about myself. My husband would blame me endlessly about what happened to my son, to our son. And, you know, but making other people feel better fixed me. And also, you know, at that time, the people that we had working for us, we'd fix them as well. We had a lot of people in bad marriages turn up to work for us. And I don't know, maybe we just attracted them. But half at fuck we had in, within 6 weeks, they'd left him, got a place of their own, and they were as happy as Larry, because we elevated people and their self-esteem and their consciousness. So by being given that role in life and that purpose in life, I started to feel better about me. But what I did, as we were serving all those people and and connecting on that level, I started to write down what it was. So what is it? What have I just said? What have I just done with my voice? What have I just done? And I used to put it, and yes, I am writing the book. I used to put it into like little lessons, little concepts. And that was the start of everything, because then I got asked to speak about how I did it. First of all, I went to a design agency and did $250,000 in my first 6 weeks and 27 grand short of $1 million in a year, not knowing anything about design, but knowing how to make people feel that they belonged to our group of people. We're pack animals, we're belongers. And I did $1 million in a year. And then I went and I did $1 million a year for 5 years running for a global design agency set up on my own. And then I started to speak about it and explain how I did it. And you've seen me do that. So yeah. Everything is in a concept. But all that stuff came from that heartbreak and from the market stall. Oh, freaking new. And would I change anything? No, I wouldn't. Because everything is meant to be and the best is yet to come. And I am convinced of that, totally.
Yeah, likewise. You mentioned a book, and I saw something on a post that you wrote the other day. I think you got a picture of your kitchen table or your desk, and yeah. You got, this is my book idea. Are you writing that now?
I am, yeah. I'm up to chapter 3, and I've been a little bit ADHD. Oh, my God, it's driving me mad. So, yeah, that will be finished. And whether I'll self-publish it or get a public, I've been speaking to a couple of publishers, actually. Not sure which way it's going to go. I just know that it'll be very useful to a lot of people. And I get quite emotional when I'm writing it because, you know, to you reading it, it would just be words. But for me, those words are coming from every good thing that ever happened in my life. Every job, every project, every speaking gig I ever did. So I get quite emotional when I'm writing it because I'm connected to all the people that I am so grateful for that elevated me to where I am today. Every single last person behind every till reception or whatever.
Is the book like an autobiography, or is it a sort of a self-development book or something different?
There's a little bit of autobiography in it, but I think I might end up writing that in the end. I think the best of that, the most interesting stuff when I end up living in Malibu with aging movie star, I think best is yet to come. But it's how to connect with people instantly. And whether you're in business or just want to go out and make friends, it's how to do that, basically. And, you know, I didn't really know whether to do it for business or just for people needing to go out and make more friends. But I don't really think there's a difference. And the latter, the going out and meeting people. So, you know, I had a bit of heartbreak last year. I'd been with somebody for a few years and blah, blah, blah. Split up, I was not in a good place. And I wanted to meet people that he was unconnected with. So I actually thought, right, well, let's see if it works. So I went out and used what I'd learned on the markets and in business to go to yoga groups or whatever and meet new people. And I've got a whole new raft of friends now. So I know that it works, and it's the body language, it's the tone, it's the telling people who you are. And how useful is that going to be at the end of all this? Mm. And how useful has it been? Because this next generation down, you know, they're at a bit of a disadvantage. We could walk up and talk to anybody because that's where we came from. But, you know, people that are speaking through social media, the problem is that they create a persona for that platform. And if they don't like all they've put out that day, they just delete it and start again as somebody else. You know, but when you walk up and you actually meet people face to face, you can't delete it, because words and emails are out there for all eternity. So we've got to learn. We've got to learn that level of expression and connection, and that's what it's all about.
It's, well, people find it very challenging, don't they? Just, you know, like networking events and business meetings, people find it really hard to actually go and do those things and just be themselves rather than some sort of caricature.
Yeah, but to be themselves, as we said at the beginning, they've got to know they are. You know, that's the hardest thing. It's working out, you know, who are you versus who you've been told to be? What's real, what isn't real? I've never met a single person who's not fascinating when they're actually being who they are. The people that pretend that they're somebody else, you know, you just don't have the freaking patience. You delete them after the first sentence, don't you? We all do.
I think that's what's so fascinating about your story. And I think that's why when I've heard you speak, and I've heard you more than once, and I don't know how many times I heard you speak, 2 or 3 times live, and the third time was just as moving and made just as much of an impression on me as the first time. You know, it's sort of that story is so compelling, and I suppose you get different things out of it as well, because, you know, things change and things happen to you as well.
Yeah, and thank you for that. The world is driven by emotion, and people don't get emotional for me. They get emotional because maybe at that time they see themselves and make sense of their self, and that's what they're getting emotional about. I mean, we do laugh as well. Can I just tell everybody? We do laugh as well. But isn't that life? You can laugh and cry at the same sentence.
Yeah.
You can be happy and sad in one day. And, you know, these speakers that stand up and go, you know, either a load of shit that never actually happened, or, you know, they're not connecting to the emotion. Stop doing it. You know, if some people have just said it one time too many. I'm so grateful for what happened to me, honest to God, and I seriously mean that. I just can't wait till I'm getting up there and I'm saying, well, I've got my own TV show now, which I've had, you know, I've got very close to them coming to me, not me looking for it so many times. Imagine if we're back here in another couple of years and I'm going, well, I'm 64, you know, I'm married to this gorgeous ex-movie star that understands me, isn't he real, you know, and look at the state of him, isn't he brilliant? And I keep flying in to see Ardani, but I've actually done pilots for NBC before now, but I've got my own show over here. And, you know, everything I ever wanted is here because of where I've been in my life. Mm. And wouldn't that be something else? I suppose my question to myself would be, at what point could you stop? Because while ever you're still incomplete, and you still think you've got more things to do, you know, would you ever stop? You know, and is that addiction to being validated, not by everybody else, but to yourself, is that addiction so strong that I would just carry on forever, no matter what? And again, I want to repeat what I said, that addiction to validation where I say I've done all right, not anybody else. You know, maybe I'll still be doing what I'm doing when I'm bloody 92. Who knows? Hope so.
Are you saying that you're doing it partly so that you get that validation for you? Is that kind of what drives you to keep going?
Yeah, I've had money, I've lost money. Money means, don't make you happy. You're just happy in a pair of Gucci shoes and a freaking Prada coat. It means nothing. Mm. That'll make me happy. What makes me happy is getting bloody yellow sweatshirt on, as it were, then, and getting on with down to Tesco's and people going, oh, I can't do it. I can't do it. I'm too shy. No, I can't do that. And next minute, we've got a freaking queue in front of us and we can't put money in till quick enough. And those people self-identify with that. That makes me happy. My mate at Tesco's in Peterborough, who worked on, she said, I only work on deli counter. She took that pizza counter to being the number one bloody pizza counter in the whole of Tesco's 335 stores, as they had them. She became identified by that. That's freaking joy. You know, you work with people and, again, you know, one minute there's not nothing, the next minute there's everything. That's joy. You know, no amount of money can ever take the place of that. So it won't make any difference. If I add it and not add it, I'm the same person. I don't bloody care. Mm. I do what I do. And, I've had 3 years off now. I've just got back into it. But I do what I do because I love it, because it's my purpose. And I'm happy. You know, I'm energized. I'm happy. I'm doing trans language. Everybody's heard people say this. But you've got to believe me. I freaking am.
If you had to describe your purpose in one sentence, then what is your purpose?
I think what I do is connect people to themselves and then show them how to connect that genius person that they are to the world. I think that's what I do. Looking back, I've never really thought of it, but looking back at some of the big successes that we've had, that's been the chain of events.
What's next for you?
Finish the book. I've just started doing these free Zooms. So, and I'm amazed at the audience that they've pulled with no advertising. So now I think my business has got, what I do, it's not my business, it's my freaking life. That part of my life is going to be split into two things. I will always do the corporate stuff because I love it. They're just people. But I think from what I've seen this last week and the emails that I've had from the one-to-one stuff, like me just talking to anybody, I think that needs to be to get a bit of my attention now, because I've been shocked at how many people connected with what I were doing really, really quick. So, it's that one-to-one. And it don't matter if it's personal people just wanting to get out into the world more, or if it's business people or people whatever it is. It's all the same thing, isn't it? It's all. We try to make it, we try to charge more because we make it sound corporate. At the end of the day, you get older people and you show them how to be more of themselves than they ever thought that they freaking could be. That's like a piece of magic, isn't it? Yeah. Can I just tell you about one little pivotal moment in my life? And she's just come into my head. Marguerite, I think she was called. And I did a massive job for World Duty Free at the airports. And we put 4 million in add-on sales. It's a couple of years ago now. 4 million in add-on sales for World Duty Free. And I worked in just about every airport in the country. And there was this young Polish girl, and she was really shy. And me and her were working on what they used to call luxury goods department. And we literally tripled Sailor sunglasses overnight. And then, so I'd work alongside of her. And then one day I was doing summer, and she came from behind this pillar, this young Polish girl, and she's crying. So I went up and I got hold of her, and I had her in my arms. And I was saying, Marguerite, who said what to you? Show me who has upset you. Let me know who, I don't care who it is. Nobody upsets my friend like this. And she was crying, and she said, no, I'm crying tears because I'm happy. I says, why? She said, because that customer and her husband over there have just spoken to me like I'm a real person and not a Polish immigrant for the first time in the 6 months that I've been here. And that was such a profound moment for me. That wasn't how other people would have seen her, but it's how Marguerite saw herself, a Polish immigrant. And we taught her to put herself out into the world in such a way that people saw the real person. And she was so moved by that. I never forgot that, Nicola. I never will forget that. And I never will forget her in my whole freaking life, ever.
I have a theory that if people could actually be more themselves when they go out into the world, that you could actually change the world.
Mm.
You know, if I call it essence, and you know, if people were actually aligned with their essence and they were living in alignment, that it starts having a knock-on effect, because all your communications, all your interactions with people change.
Yeah, Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. And it goes back to that thing that nobody knows who they are anymore. And we don't know who they are. But I mean, who people are anymore. But, you know, it's only what? How old am I? 62. Well, it's only 50 years ago that everybody knew everybody else in Home Firth. You know, everybody knew the essence of who you were, as you would put it. That everybody knew who you were genetically. You didn't have to explain yourself to anybody. You were who you were, and people accepted you for that person. You know, now we have to explain ourselves because nobody knows who we are to anybody because we've all moved for work, families aren't what they were. We're all so disjointed. So, you know, that's the thing, isn't it? Hopefully we'll reach a point again where we have community and we all know who we are because if we know who you are, we're going to accept you. That's the thing. We only, and why you are as you are, we only delete you if we can't understand you. And that's the point, isn't it? So, we're hoping for a better world, a better, more understanding of each other world.
That leads me on to a question that somebody who follows me on Instagram has asked. She actually said, can you make sure you interview Nikki Pattinson?
Hey, she'll probably bloody regret that now. He or she will be going, oh, shit, I wish I'd never said that.
Well, she's also Nicola. She's called Nicola Fiona Grace on Instagram.
Oh, yes. Lovely. Yeah, I do. I know her. She's great. Hiya. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you very much for that.
She said, how are you coping with the current situation?
What a bit of a shock to start with. It was, as I was saying on my Zoom on Friday, it was like a slow reveal, wasn't it? So I were in London the Friday before lockdown and I were picking up a big job or discussing a big job for a big makeup house and it would have been a huge piece of work. And I had, as you know, I've had a lot of time off and I've got a lot of work in the book for April. So I'm sat there going to pick this job up and I'm actually sat waiting for this HR director to meet me and I just got a text saying can't come, emergency coronavirus meeting, and I'd, you know, spent 230 quid going down. I'm sat there and I thought, oh, bollocks. And then I got a text from my friend who worked the other side of London and the same thing had happened to her. So we went and we met at King's Cross and went for his dinner and for a drink, and we started to pick up an energy that were happening. We'd kind of dismissed it. And then you get a bit, so you absorb that much shock. And then you move on a bit further, you get a bit more, you start to see things on telly and you absorb that. And then you get a bit more, it's a slow reveal. That has been much better for us than if it just happened overnight. Like somebody had declared war on us overnight and we'd have had to go into our houses. So I've been all right because my son is at home and, you know, I've been able to see my son every day and that's been such a joy for me. You know, he's nearly 30. You don't want to be bloody old up with old bird. You know, it's a wonder I've been stuck under a freaking patio. I think there's time yet. So I've quite enjoyed it because, you know, I will not worry about money. I won't ever worry about money again as long as I live. We did enough of that when my marriage split up and blah, blah, blah. So I've been able to concentrate on what I should have been doing a long time ago, which is putting stuff online, doing stuff like this, doing my Zooms, actually looking at myself again. Whereas if that had happened, I'd have had false eyelashes, top and bottom, a Prada jacket on, and I'd have been out going, hello, you know, and I'd have been completely outwardly projecting. So do you know what? I've been all right. And that, you know, I've been shocked, of course, at what is happening. And but for me personally, it could be the best pause in my life because what I'm doing now could well elevate me to the place that I dreamed of. So, you know, I've been all right. Long answer to a short question.
Well, actually, it follows on quite nicely to another question that Nicola.
Oh, my son has literally just come up the stairs right now in his he's been out on his bike. He's just gone into his bedroom. Hiya, Danny. All right.
Hiya.
Yeah, Nicola shouting hi at here. I'm just doing a podcast interview thing. Yeah, how many miles have you done?
30
freaking miles. That's my boy, ladies and gentlemen. That's my boy. And even to this day, you know, anybody that knows me, if I don't care what I'm doing, I could be stood on stage in front of 1,000 people. If that phone rattles in my pocket and it's him, I usually answer it. Anyway, sorry, carry on, Nicola.
The other question that Nicola asked was, is there anything that you're working on yourself that you want to improve?
Yes, I want to stop being, I'm a little bit ADHD. And I find it really difficult to organise things and so, which is why most of my stuff has never got online. I could stand up out there now in front of 20,000 people and just go, right, let me tell you a couple of stories. You're not going to freaking believe this. But to sit and write that is a massive, the word is challenge for me. It does my freaking head in. I could scream. But I'm making myself do it because I've got two choices and I'm visual. So I wouldn't be able to record it because I need to see those words and how I feel in the presence of the words on the page. So that is what I'm working on right now, my head.
My last question to you then is, what makes you unique?
The same thing that makes everybody unique. We're all unique souls and we've all been to so such unique places in our heart and our mind. Yeah, the same thing that makes everybody else unique. It's just that maybe I've worked out how to explain that slightly more adeptly than most people.
That's cool. Thank you so much for doing this.
Nicola, thank you. Thank you. How great to see you again. I hope everybody didn't fall asleep at 1 minute 32 seconds.
I don't think they will have done. Thank you so much.
Thank you. And lovely to see you all. God bless you all. Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed this week's podcast as much as I did. You can find me online at Seed to Source. And if you'd like to share your story of personal change, do get in touch. Thanks for listening, and I hope you have a wonderful week.